On this week's show, the year in review and a look ahead to 2024.
Construction is the world's oldest industry but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started the ConTech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in ConTech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's ConTech Crew time.
All right, we're back. This is going to be a fun one. You'll notice we only have two of my friends here with me today. I have Ariel Castillo. Ariel, welcome back to the show, man. How are you?
Thank you, Jeff. Super excited to be, again, spending some time with you. And of course, with our other co-host. How's it going, Nathan?
Oh, man, I am fantastic. You see my wife over me on her way out. I'm in a new location because downstairs is full of packages and other boxes as we are doing final paint here on the house. But excited to be here and recap last year. Sorry for the noise, by the way.
Hey, you know, Nathan's always in an active job site. And, you know, we'll be reviewing Nathan's punch list for his 2023 was getting his house remodeled and acting like a GC again. So probably some learning from that there. Before we jump into all of that, a pause for the cause.
Everyone supports a culture of well-being in the field and is equipped with the tools to help prevent suicide in construction. Procore Safety Qualified courses were built in partnership with our customers, elevating enhancements to their standard OSHA training. And the Bringing the Right Mindset series equips individuals and leaders alike with the skills necessary to really build resilient teams. We've made these three courses available for free and on demand, and they're offered both in English as well as Spanish, and they are CEU certifiable. Procore.com/certified-qualified is where we host our Procore's learning portal, and anyone can use their Procore credentials or create a free account to get started.
Hey, remember to check us out on YouTube. We're back, youtube.com/@TheConTechCrew. And another little piece of news, we're going to be changing up that newsletter and you're going to want to jump on board. So if you're not already subscribed or maybe you're putting that into your junk mail, you're going to want to open it back up and look out for our new monthly newsletter that's going to talk a little bit about the future, about what's going on, provide you with a little more feedback. So get out there and subscribe and sign up for that email newsletter.
At the ConTech Crew, we focus on technology that solves industry problems. So today, I want to talk to you about Join. Every construction project is a unique prototype, and it's actually shaped by thousands of decisions that impact the owner's business case, design, and the budget. Today, the communication driving these decisions is disjointed across all the stakeholders. Work happens in email, Excel, estimating, resulting in delays, waiting for decisions, waiting for access to information, and sometimes that information is outdated and incomplete. Managing the expectations of the team and keeping the project moving forward is a constant challenge, and a lot of times drives skepticism amongst the contributors. Join empowers general contractors to build with confidence and maximize the potential of every project by connecting these owners through new workflows that fit into your existing processes. We bring design teams and trade partners into a single platform. There's transparency and collaboration in the decision-making, which builds trust and sets projects up for success. You might be asking yourself, do you need another tool? Well, let me tell you, Join fits in seamlessly with your processes and your other tools. In fact, we're here to help those other tools. Regardless of your estimating system or your project management process, Join will be a valuable added resource without disrupting those other systems and your teams. So listen, put your spreadsheets on ice and leave your email behind for the decision-making platform for the built environment. Learn more at join.build.
All right, we're back and we're going to try a little something new here. I've been in a bit of a reflective mood lately, looking back at 2023 and And a lot of things are going to be changing for me personally in 2024. So I really wanted to sit down with you guys and talk a little bit about maybe our highlights of 2023 and then really look forward into the future and just kind of set the stage. Because I always love to do that, especially because then at the end of the year, we can use this to go back and show me how wrong I usually am, right? So nothing like telling me how wrong I am. Nathan, I want you to start with kind of what were your highlights? What was a highlight for 2023? And then we'll keep going.
You know, I think for me, it really goes back to that big long word of interoperability. It's something that, you know, I reflect back on 6, 7, 8 years ago when I first learned about it and the importance of it for all this data and AI and all these fun buzzwords we're going to talk about. But I think it was a year of really recognizing that with all this power of AI and machine learning and what's out there, that we really do need to focus on kind of that blocking and tackling, and that it starts with this, you know, big long word of interoperability.
Yeah, it really was kind of at the forefront, at least in construction tech, for sure, that it was a year to start looking at those things. I'm interested, Ariel, what were your thoughts on, you know, some of the highlights of 2023 from your perspective?
Yeah, on my end, man, I love the fact that I am getting to see that subcontractors are getting used to using digital applications on the job site. So I think it's kind of interesting that you're getting not only architects and GCs, but that the acceptance that we're getting from subcontractors is growing year over year. And then the second one is that 2022 was an interesting year because, you know, we left COVID behind to a certain degree, and we started getting those events. But in 2023 is when you notice that, hey, we're back in person, and there's so much activities going on when you go to, you know, like either it's a ground break, Autodesk University, or any of these events that are gathering so many amazing people together.
Yeah, it really was a resurgence of kind of going fully back in. In fact, I'd have to argue that, and maybe we get some numbers from some of those folks, but I bet you the numbers were up over pre-COVID years even, because that's what it felt like. I mean, Nathan, you were at quite a few with us.
Well, yeah, I think the numbers were way up. I would be interested, though, just as I reflect back, because, you know, 2022 was really the first year that you had anything coming back, and there was just so much excitement around anything where people were getting together. But I almost feel like this year, again, because of all the work that's going on, because of how busy people are, even though folks were there and the numbers were big, everybody just felt drained, or like it just the energy felt a little bit different this year. And maybe that was just me, but it'd be interesting to see if what you guys think, or where the numbers reflect that.
Yeah. Well, if you got the numbers out there and you want to let us know, guys. I'd be interested. But Nathan, I think that goes along with a theme I saw over the year was, I would call it a level of frustration, maybe a touch of apathy. There was a lot of tech burnout that we were seeing. And I think that's what you were kind of feeling in the mood of like, great, you know, it's awesome to be back together and we're hearing great numbers and we have great backlog, but like, what the heck is this really doing for us? And then, you know, I'd spin it too, that as awesome as it is, we'll cover some more of it. I also think AI and the rise of ChatGPT and those things was pretty poorly placed when you look at the overall construction, you know, fatigue point. I think they really took it as like, really? More?
I would argue, yeah, I think it fueled a lot of that burnout. There's so many conversations where it's like, oh, my executives are coming to me with this whole like AI thing now. And it's like another thing you have to explain to them of all these other tools. And yeah, I think a lot of that burnout is others' excitement around our technology actually leads technologists to become more burnt out. It's an interesting conundrum.
Yeah, you know, I'd be interested, Ariel, because it's like, I'm sure you got asked like, hey, what is AI going to do? What's our AI strategy? And I don't know about you, but I had a couple of folks, you know, kind of lean on my shoulder and be like, they want me to worry about my AI strategy and I can't get my QAQC forms filled out digitally. Like, I'm still struggling with time cards, people. So I'm kind of interested, Ariel, what was your take on that?
So, you know, I'm going to take a step back. I think there's always, you know, like the positive side and obviously the negative side of things. And I think it's great that we are getting into all this new technology. But on the other end, I'm going to go back to a couple of years back in, let's say 2018, 2019, when the term, you know, app fatigue came very relevant in the industry because we got so many applications out there and we were even figuring out like, how are we going to do this? Because now we have to juggle between 5-7 applications and you're trying to push somebody to use an iPad. And now you're also pushing like all these apps. So it got a little bit of, you know, kind of annoying. The way I associate that with today is that we are talking about common data environments. We're talking about BIM. And all of a sudden you throw in artificial intelligence as well. You keep throwing more things into that basket. So it's pretty exciting because we have all these tools available, but also, hey, how are we going to get this up and running? You know, there's so much that we need to teach and even prep our companies to leverage them the right way.
Yeah, so much of AI is based on foundational data integration work. And, you know, it kind of exacerbated a lot of people's problems. I think there was quite a few times I've had conversations where it was like, yeah, those are great ideas, but like you don't have a data set ready to do anything with or to pull any insights from. So the reason we've been talking to you for this long about, you know, getting your strategies in order is because we always know something like this is coming. And if you think this is the end, like there is no end to the innovation curve, right? It just continues and it continues to get steeper. And, you know, if you're sitting waiting, you know, for the right time to get in, then you're already too late. It was time to get in. And if you're not in, you need to get in and get in now. And you need to do it in such a way that's, you know, pretty strategic. But also, you know, for me personally, this goes back to sustainability, right? We've taught this and agile and lean and those things get kind of misconstrued or misused over time. But ultimately, at their core, it's about creating a sustainable path to implementing change and new features, whether that's in your construction process or in your software process or what. It's about sustainability because there's always going to be the next big shiny object. And if you didn't already have that in your innovation culture, then I think AI is really going to push you into some serious burnout and uncomfortable places. But the vice versa, Ariel, I love that you hit that because for me, it's like, well, actually, if you were sustainable and you did have a basic structure, wow, now you've got a springboard to take leaps forward that you didn't have before. And that's sort of the power of what it is. So I'm really excited for us to kind of dive in. So I'm going to let Nathan dive in. What's your 2023 encapsulated article, you know, and let's dive into a little bit of the past news and we'll look at the forward news in a minute.
Yeah, sure. So with mine, I think it does go back to basics and I like to look at, you know, there's the technology BIM that's been advancing. There's individuals that like to take advantage of it. There's businesses that are now capitalizing it and seeing advantages. But I think as we've been talking about, not necessarily every company can make that business case for the adoption of BIM. But part of that reason is because we don't have public policy in place that's enforcing that. And so my article that I shared earlier this year around the $85 million from the federal government, from the Biden administration that is going to fund the digital adoption. So the very long acronym that they chose to use here that I'll read for everyone is the ADCMS, which stands for, hold on here, I'll find it here, Advanced Digital Construction Management Systems. So again, all about reducing paper, increasing digital adoption, and funding those systems that are needed and creating those requirements and creating those incentive models that start from the federal highway and work their way down to the state DOTs and so on. So while it's not necessarily a sexy, you know, technology thing, I think it's really at the core of the blocking and tackling of what's needed to clean up data and really take advantage of all the things we've just been talking about.
Yeah, I mean, it was a huge announcement and it really fell in line with the IIJA, which if you guys don't know, it's the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, which really was a giant investment in the infrastructure of the United States to, you know, build new roads, bridges, high-speed rail, all sorts of those kinds of projects. And they were very thoughtful in putting in $85 million to really incentivize the digitization of the process. And so again, it's putting your money where your mouth is behind some policy. And I think that's a super powerful piece of what we saw. I mean, IIJA had a huge impact in backlogs, in competition across the United States. And so, Ariel, I'm interested, you know, it's great to see these kind of things. What are your thoughts on the, you know, the $85 million and how somebody might approach it?
Again, I think that every time that we can, you know, put money out there for a good cause and implement, using it for the common goal that we have in improving basically adoption and technology and all that, it's just great. I mean, even if it's a dollar extra, I think it's just really valuable that we can continue the journey and understand that it's part of the investment that we just need to put out there.
It really is. Put your money where your mouth is. And you know, Nathan, I should clean that up, right? It's show me how I'm measured and I'll show you how I act. Or now you can fix that one again.
Close enough. Yeah. Tell me how I'm measured. I'll tell you how I behave. But
yeah. And that's, yeah. And show me where I'm incentivized. You know, again,
what's in it for me
and construction companies out there too. Like a lot of this sounds like we're coming down on people and that would be something I think I was trying to be pretty thoughtful about in 2023. We have to realize that a lot of what construction does or does not do from an adoption perspective and an innovation perspective is because of the risk tolerance and the extreme risks that go into the built environment. When you're building roads and building bridges, I can guarantee you don't want to take too many risks, right? So there's a natural risk aversion in our technology and advancement. So we as innovators and as people who push for it have to be thoughtful about that, have to be understanding of it, and have to articulate that. That's why when I come across a company that's, you know, burnt out or, you know, kind of overwhelmed, my first thing is, okay, are you making money? Yes. Are you getting business done? Yes. Then stop listening to people that are coming down on you. Pat yourself on the back. But grab yourself by the bootstraps, take a deep breath, and take one step forward. That's the thing, is too many people, and I can't tell you how many AI arguments I got in over this, where it was like, your job's going to go away, the whole world's going to change, everybody's going to, and I'm like, whoa, slow down, right? You're trying to eat the cake in one bite, and it's not going to work. Right? You've got to be calculated. You got to be thoughtful. You got to take small steps forward and meet people where they are, right? We're all somewhere else in a development of a skill, whether it's a journeyman, an apprentice electrician, or a journeyman that's becoming a project manager or superintendent. You know, they each need to be met at different places. And we got to be ready to meet those companies there. We got to be able to meet the industry there. So it's a great year, Nathan.
I mean, I love your point of, you know, there's a reason why that's the way we've always done it, right? And I'm constantly reminding myself of that as someone who habitually always tries to figure out a new way of doing it to a fault, to the point where I can't standardize anything because I'm always innovating. But yeah, I think there is a balance there of what got us here isn't going to get us there is one side of the argument, but that there is so much complexity and so many systems in the way we've always done it for a reason because of all the other failures that we've learned from. So we really have to consider both sides anytime we make decisions to change or to transform into the future. But we have to. We have to move at some point, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You can't be frozen in your boots either because it will eventually affect you. And Ariel, I'm interested because, you know, you're at the forefront of doing this for medium-sized general contractor, but very digitalized and really, really pushing forward. How do you guys manage that? What goes through your mind as you're starting to think about that risk, but also that reward of taking a few steps?
You know, the reality is that it's not simple. We have talked about how, you know, there's a lot of generations involved. And like you guys were saying, there's a way of thinking where, hey, we've been successful doing this, and we may think, you know, that it's going to get us to the next level. But as you know, we need to change, and change is not something that people love. And there's two ways to change, right? You can make it because, you know, you are very proactive, or you can just make it because you're reactive and the market's taking you there. You don't want to do the latter one, right? You don't want to be driven by the market. Now, I think it's interesting because if you wait a lot, what you're going to notice is that there's a lot of construction companies, specifically your competition, that they will be getting better just by doing it in a different way. And you will eventually just have to play catch up. And we don't want to play catch up. So we're trying to go for the proactive approach. And that's basically the way it's been going.
That's an awesome point to bring up, right? There's a natural competition and you're competing with people in your market for jobs. And I think we're seeing owners and serial builders start to look for your technology platform, the way you're going to deliver data and information as a strategic advantage. So I'm interested, Ariel, do you see that not only just being left behind in one respect, but also that infecting your competition and your ability to win jobs?
I think, you know, the moves that we make will always affect how we get jobs and how we attract not only new clients, but also talent. As you know, we've been struggling as an industry to get people, right? So it's not only differentiating yourself from the competition just to get more clients, but also to put your name out there and attract new people, keep the talent that you currently have. And again, just making everybody happier about their day-to-day. It's not about putting, you know, 80 hours a week. It's about being successful, delivering quality work, and just minimizing the amount of hours that it takes you to do your job.
You've already given me my nugget for this show, Ariel. That is a key, is that we do win work based on, you know, the project team that's going to deliver. So if you want the best and brightest project team, then you've got to provide them with the best in class tools so that their job is enjoyable and powerful and not, you know, based in paperwork and digging out of daily reports, et cetera. So it's a powerful thing that I think technologists can use to go to your senior, you know, people, to your leadership and say, listen, here's another reason that we need these tools. Nathan, you're shaking your head. I think you're in here.
I think just looking for any of those opportunities for innovation, it's almost, you're describing like the Google 10% or the 20% rule that they used to have. Yeah. That, you know, you'd always spend one day a week just working on whatever it is that you want to work on or how to make your own job easier. And if you don't build in that time to test and to fail and to learn, you'll never get any better. And I think that's a lot of that burnout, is that we're so busy just doing the things we have to do every day that we don't actually have the time to build in time for innovation. And it becomes frustrating.
Yeah, too busy being busy, right? Ariel, it looked like you had a thought there.
Yeah, so, you know, the AGC, end of last year, they had this survey where a lot of information was collected and there was a focus on technology that I think it's very interesting that we can talk about. Because they said that when it comes to accounting and project management software adoption, they both grew 38%. And they were able to recognize that firms are putting way more dollars towards this type of solutions. Then the other thing is, on the negative side, is that they identified that the challenges that we're running into, number one is finding time to implement new technologies and training employees. The other one would be employee resistance and also cybersecurity. And I think it's interesting to connect all those thoughts to everything that you guys have been saying, because again, they're all intertwined.
Yeah. And, you know, nobody loves blocking and tackling, but, you know, ERP accounting systems are blocking and tackling. They are the foundation of the innovation. And I think project management systems at this point have reached that same precipice of being a table stakes and needing to be a part of it. And that does, I mean, change management is just, it's a lost art in construction. It really is. And we really could use to get better at it. You know, I'm not ready to change my prediction for 2024 yet, but you're pushing me towards like, maybe it should be focused on change management.
Well, I think that's part of this inflection point that we're at right now, is that BIM in the cloud and project management in the cloud have now reached this sort of level of maturity, and they're now starting to bash heads with each other, which the whole philosophy and the whole idea of BIM was that, yeah, everything would be kind of tied through this central model. And again, I've always advocated for, well, really, we can have separate but equal, and that, you know, you're always going to want to take one little piece of the pie, or you could use the whole six-sided cube analogy of everyone's going to want a different slice of the data, but it's the same central data. Mm-hmm. And so I think, yeah, like we're finally at the point where technology is no longer the excuse for all this stuff to happen. It's really just us getting in our own way and our processes and incentive structures and all that other stuff to fix this. So yeah, I think that what you just brought up, Ariel, is a perfect overview and you know, data-driven realization of where we're at today.
That's awesome. And I'm going to pivot us because, Ariel, I was really surprised at the 2023 article you brought. So talk a little bit about what you saw for 2023 and brought to us for an article.
When you talk about the you know, this AGC survey, something that they also highlighted is that infrastructure and public projects will remain prime. Industry is looking for ways to get young people into the trades. And we know that that's a tough one. But they're looking for ways into motivating the younger generation. The construction is not a getting an L, basically. And then the other one is that contractors are, you know, looking for opportunities to do good training, get good project managers that are not only doing it, you know, again, like old school, like we talked about, and just by relying on paper, but understanding that there's so many tools out there that they can leverage in order to be more efficient on their job. So I don't know if you want to touch on any of those three, but I think these are great topics to talk about.
We really, and it's been at the forefront for the last year of talking about, you know, really bringing the trades to the education table as a true alternative to, you know, what we think of higher education. I think we need trade programs and certifications and those kinds of things to be seen as direct paths to higher education in their own right, and as, quite frankly, a true job path that parents can feel good about their kids being a part of, that guidance counselors can be incentivized to push it. I was just talking to my neighbor the other day, and his son is, you know, an apprentice electrician right now, and is, you know, came out of high school and was really apt for it and is working every day, and he's watching his friends spend their money, and he's making money, and he's learning, and, you know, he's not just learning electrician, he's learning how to run a business because it's a small company. So it's a powerful opportunity that, you know, this year really, we started to see it grow. I mean, think about, Nathan, I the number of different programs we saw highlight that.
And I think that is going to be what is really different about this next generation, not even Generation Z, but like the next one after that, is that they really will grow up not thinking of a construction or a trade route or anything other than college being any less than college. College is just where people go that want to go that route. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, I think, whereas, yeah, in the 90s, it was very much like you are not successful if you don't go to college. And I think that mindset is changing. So it's cool to reflect back as someone who is a product of that culture, and to, you know, try and change that, at least for my next generation.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a product of that. I have the paper. And so I get paid well, but in the end, really, I don't use that paper. And I think you'll also see, and I'm going to put a little prediction out, that you're also going to see other, I wouldn't call them trade areas, but I think they are. You're going to see cybersecurity as an alternative method. I think you're going to see coding and some other things like that take non-traditional routes for certifications and growth, because so many of these kids can be effective so quickly and don't need maybe the rest of that broad education that we think universities provide. Now, don't get me wrong. I think it will even out because, you know, I'm a big fan of higher education and the process itself for the right people. It's just got to be way more balanced. So, Ariel, that was an awesome recap article to bring to us. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Wondering, what about you, Jeff? Tell me what you got going on. I know you're curious to share a couple of ones.
Well, I got a little fun one, man. I went back over in prep for this on like looking at what was my most active post around an article. There was a couple of other things that went on along the way that probably got more eyes on it. But it's really funny. I posted way back in April and I just said, is this BIM thing a fad? And I had posted an article on BIM and construction market. The global market is growing at a CAGR of 14.5% during the forecasted period, basically talking about the six that, according to the report, the global BIM in construction market is expected to grow from 6.6 billion in 2022 to reach 13 billion by 2033, growing at a compounded annual growth rate, CAGR, of 14.5% from 2023 to 2033. So my whole thing was, no, the money says it's not a fad, but let me tell you, you want to bring the clickbait out? Just say, is BIM a fad? I think 13,000 people got eyes on that one. It was crazy. So it just an interesting one. But to me, the undercurrent of that is that we are finally seeing, I don't want to call it a level of frustration, but an angst that this thing isn't a fad, right? That BIM is the future and BIM is a thing. And so beware if you're not careful. Nathan, anything to take away from that one? I mean, the numbers are staggering.
I think you could insert Bitcoin and you know, instead of BIM, and have, you know, everything you just said, and it would have applied the same way. I think any of these new quote unquote fads, like, yeah, they're going to go through ups and downs of their adoption life cycle, and who knows how well Gartner predicts, you know, if it'll be 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. I think we've always said it'll be 5 to 10 years out, and every year we say another 5 to 10. But yeah. I do think we're at a certain point here where things are starting to change, but I would argue it's going to be a lot longer still than we think it's going to be. But it's okay. It's going to be a long road. We've got long careers ahead of us. We'll be fine.
Ari, you think we're at the BIM inflection point yet?
Man, I had a meeting yesterday where I was saying that as GCs and construction managers, I want us to host meetings with AE teams just to tell them, hey, we are interested in implementing BIM, because it's not being addressed as the way it was supposed to be for us. And we just want them to know that we're interested in implementing it. You know, we're interested in leveraging the models that they're probably already doing, right? And we also need to do that, you know, that's kind of like an upstream in a way with also clients, but downstream with the subcontractors as well, because we want to explain to them what BIM is all about. So where I'm going with all this is that we just sat down yesterday to discuss what's going to be our BIM strategy moving forward, if we're going to go for this at all or not. So
that's where we're at. Yeah, nothing wrong with that. That's where we're at.
Well, and then you've got folks out there like, you know, throw a little Alex Belkoffer out there, you know, at McCarthy, they talk about the integrated digital builder. Yeah. And I think that's really starting to see the philosophy of GCs and trade contractors, you know, you working together in a coordinated model that's really integrating what we do digitally with what we do physically and delivering a better product in the end. I think that's, again, we gotta look for the measurement, and the measurement really is a higher quality output with less waste. And I mean, it's hard to quantify that at certain points, but you know, and if you add in predictability and reduce risk, those types of things are quantifiable. But I think it's the time, man. I really do. And my second one was I wanted to remind folks, just so you know, that ChatGPT-4 was released in March of 2023. So all of that, OpenAI announced it on March 2023. I don't know about you, but that seems like 15 years ago and a billion conversations ago that overtook our world. I mean, I don't know that it's a you know, one of those moments where you ask, where were you sitting when you heard about, you know, ChatGPT or OpenAI? But I certainly know where I was when the conversation started to get serious. And mm-hmm. I mean, Nathan, how long ago does that seem?
Or even just the first response to a GPT that you were sent. I think it was Walker Locker sent me one that he had asked it and got the response. It was just really clever and really interesting. Like, I feel like I haven't dabbled as much in it because I don't know. I don't know what questions to even ask it. it's kind of crazy. Yeah. Like what stuff it'll come back with. But I was just, impressed with, and will always remember what folks sent me as far as some of the crazy responses that it came back with. But yeah, it seems like those were 2 or 3 years ago, not, 9 months ago.
Yeah. I mean, Ariel, do you remember what your first ChatGPT interaction or something somebody sent you was?
Man, I don't remember, but I am going to tell you right now. Oh, basically, I wanted to ask, I asked ChatGPT if BIM is Revit and if Revit is BIM, because I was curious about the answer. That was the first thing that I asked ChatGPT, man. It was a good answer. It was a really good answer.
That's a great question. What did it say? Do you remember?
No, it actually talked about Revit BIM, a tool, that uses building information modeling so that it can be considered a BIM application. Nonetheless, BIM is not Revit. And it talks about people believing it's the same because of the marketing strategy that they have used, Autodesk has used. So I don't know. I think it's just kind of interesting that I asked that and the answer was pretty good.
It's funny that BIM was at the forefront of our first interactions with it. Although I'm going to have to be the one that my first BIM interaction, I'm not going to out the or first ChatGPT interaction. I'm not going to out the person, but they sent me a country song based on BIM. So that was what they asked. It was to write.
Oh my God.
It was to write a country song about BIM. And I will tell you, it didn't go very well for the country song and BIM, but it was funny. So, I mean, again, that was the year past. So let's look ahead to the future, guys. I'm very excited moving into 2024. I think it's going to be an interesting year across the board, and I'm very interested to get your thoughts, Ariel, on maybe some of the articles and where you think things are going. What do you got to highlight for us today?
Okay, so I have an interesting one, and I don't want to necessarily focus on the specific article, but just what this could potentially mean. And this one, it's about an interesting fusion that is coming up, connecting luxury and innovation. And is that Mercedes-Benz, the German automaker, is stepping into the world of high-end real estate with the Mercedes-Benz Places. It's a project that's going to be located in Dubai, and it's 65 stories. It's a skyscraper, basically, in Dubai, right? And they talk about how they're going to go for this state-of-art smart home technology approach, having amazing views and focusing on being a modern and intelligent living building. So I'm just going to cut it there. This is not only a Mercedes approach. There's other companies like Bugatti, Aston Martin, Bentley, and others that are jumping into a similar venture. So they're jumping into this construction environment. And I think it's kind of interesting. So I want to get your thoughts about that. And if this is somehow reflecting in, how other industries could be jumping into ours.
I didn't believe you were going to, that this was a true story until you said Dubai. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, if it's Dubai, then. So it's almost like you get like asterisks of like, well, yeah, but it's Dubai.
Well, I think there's a lot to unpack there, right? Like if you just look at it from a pure innovation perspective, right? I'm like, go for it. Those are some very serious brands with a lot of innovation in their cars, but also a lot of ideas around, what automation and home integration and smart devices can be. So to really start to think of our environment and our transportation as an extension of our smart living, there's a ton of power in that and a ton of opportunity for them to innovate. I mean, if you think about the progression of the automation and the integration of technology into cars, I mean, just get into a modern car right now. And if you had told somebody just 15 to 20 years ago that that's what it was going to look like, they'd have said you were crazy. And so I think it's an opportunity to take that type of innovation into the built environment and do something with it. I mean, I think a lot of what is awesome about car manufacturers is the innovation is the rubber has hit the road, right? Whether it's, you've driven a modern car now, you have a heads-up display that nobody else can see that shows you how fast you're driving. So you're looking ahead. It shows you oncoming problems. You know, we're integrating Waze and other technologies into to drive traffic patterns and to make for less congestion, et cetera. You know, imagine if your car could just tell you like, hey, man, if you don't leave for work right now, you're going to be late, or you might want to leave a half hour later and your drive's going to be 15 minutes. Like, and enjoy this. I don't know. You know, who knows what else they could do in the house? Nathan, you're going along with it. What are you thinking?
If this is a race to who's going to achieve true design for manufacturing and assembly of vertical buildings, I'm going to put my money on Mercedes and Audi before, you know, Turner and Bechtel. Because I think they are closer to what it is that we're looking for and what you're going to need to do. And if they can build these relationships and learn through a Dubai experience and then say, hey, we've proven it. And with the right inspection, you know, and governance structure and whatever else they need in these other countries to do that, they can really scale this thing. So yeah, I'd be nervous if I'm in the, you know, modular prefab space that these guys can come in and take over the market.
I'm going to argue with you a little bit there. I think they're better at design for manufacturing and assembly, obviously, you know, that, but I think actually you hit it. The partnership of, you know, a Mercedes or a Bugatti or a Audi actually working closely with their knowledge of design and manufacturing and cross-pollinating that with builders that know building, whew, that could be a nice accelerant.
Yeah,
that's the way I'm looking.
Use infinite game theory. My argument, but yes, I agree with you. Yes, and
you know, I think that the topic gets interesting because think about, and it could be a synergy thing. They're bringing something to the table, and they're doing a joint venture with a construction company that is very innovative, and they're looking for ways to connect both industries and get the best of each. I just wanted to bring in that, think about the construction industry was a mess when it comes to technology a decade ago. And a lot of the, you know, the people from the software industry just came to pretty much to take over everything that we didn't do in the past. So I wonder if there's something there that, you know, they're looking into and we're missing.
All right. Well, that was a good one. Nathan, what do you got?
I'm going to stay on this trend of our infrastructure industry and the transportation world. So I can remember as an intern in the estimating world of TxDOT having to submit bids where literally you were driving up to the office, putting the piece of paper in the envelope, sealing it up and turning it in as of, you know, whatever exact time they had to seal it up. And then whatever the number was is the job that you got. And so, you know, it's cool to see what 15 plus years later that TxDOT has a whole website now that they've been advertising. Thank you, Todd Sutton, for sharing all this information with me of really where things are going with this IIJA funding and all these efforts to digitize our roadways, or at least the delivery of our roadways. So again, this digital delivery that the Texas Department of Transportation is focused on is really looking at utilizing digital methods to share construction models and data between pre-construction and construction. So they've got this whole roadmap of what they have plans to do that started in 2018 and is expanding, you know, past 2024. But what's really important there as I look at this kind of roadmap graphic they have on the site is that in the spring of 2024 is their first fully digital pilot project, which means for us BIM folks, model as the legal document or BIM as the true deliverable. So it's a cool, you know, again, milestone for the necessary things are going to have to happen to have a high quality, reliable handover of the designers and the engineers roadway model to what's going to come over to the contractor. So, you know, we're really hoping and pushing for Zachary to win this bid in March so we can, you know, really look at this as an awesome pilot project to share with the rest of the country and other state DOTs to leverage the power of this. So I think really excited for 2024 to be really a year of governance and a year of action from the sort of legal and contract side of things to get ourselves in gear to build those foundations and take advantage of all this data we generate.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. I love the roadmap that they built and really posted up there to show where they've been, where they're going, and where they want to get to. That's a lofty goal and great to see. It's funny you brought that up. Like you remember doing that. I was sitting at an AGC event with Peyton Kringley and Ryan Friend, and they were discussing that was their job at a point in time, to dress in a suit, and somebody was driving and illegally parking so the other one could run in and make sure, you know, it got to the right person at the right time. And I was like, wait a minute, you guys are too young for that to have been too long ago. And they're like, oh no, that was only like a couple of years ago.
Yeah. You're sitting in the car waiting for the phone call of like the last little number change, 'cause you got a number faxed in from someone of a lower bid. And so you got to, you know, scratch out and rewrite the final number and then sign it and seal it and turn it in. It was crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it just seems like those would have been far off days, and they really aren't. So this is awesome to see. I mean, Ariel, I'm interested, you know, just to see a digital delivery roadmap from a Department of Transportation anywhere is kind of cool.
Yeah, and I was going to say a shout out to people spending time and or investing time in creating roadmaps for their departments, their projects, their companies. It's great to be able to have a plan, and then also being able to look back and see, hey, this is what we have been able to achieve in the last 3, 4, 5 years, and this is where we're going. I think it's key, and it's easy to also manage your budget. And when people jump on board, or you know, there's a rotation, somebody goes into another project, and somebody new comes in, you have this roadmap showing, hey, this is the effort that where we're going. And I don't know, I think it's just great to have that tool there available for everybody.
That's awesome, man. That was a great one, Nathan. I like it. I'm going to finish this out here and incorporate a little bit of Ariel's second article as well. But I had to broadcast this a little bit. I have found Morning Brew and Tech Brew. And if you guys have not heard of this newsletter, like, I'm always looking for a nugget newsletter that I can learn some things from. And again, for me, for 2024, I want to sort of change my perspective and the way I view things. So this one comes from Tech Brew, and Nathan, I think you'll like this. It's AI, in which we attempt to determine where AI is headed in 2024. Will the hype wave finally crest next year? And it talks a little bit about the AI hype train, and you know, a lot of the transformative tech with the large language models and the bandwagoning. But some experts have pointed to signs that generative AI could be headed for what research firm Gartner famously calls the trough of disillusionment, the period in every hype cycle when a tech fails to live up to outsized initial expectations quickly enough or not at all. And I find this to be really interesting, because many of the people in April that were preaching on high that AI was going to just foundationally shift the world in 6 months, and you would write new applications and existing applications and companies would be out of business, are now starting to come around to maybe we overinflated that one. And I seem to remember sitting there saying, have you guys forgotten that like no technology can get past the Gartner hype cycle? Like, that cycle has proven itself. I don't know that it's ever been proven wrong. Nathan, has it?
Yeah. No, and I think, you know, you could almost overlay Jeffrey Moore's innovation life cycle of, you know, our early adopters and the late adopters, and that chasm that you have to cross with that Gartner hype cycle. Yeah. And you've got those early innovators that are basically hyping up the hype even higher and higher and higher. And then you've got those that are kind of what I would call the early adopters on the other side of the chasm, which a lot of times I put myself into that category, or at least I play that role in my negativity of things, of like, hey, the more I can tamp down this hype, the less of a fall and less of its crash it's going to be into that trough of disillusionment. But there's always a crash. There's always a trough somewhere. It's just how big are you going to fall from the top of that peak down to the trough. So it's only time will tell how we come through this one. But it is a natural cycle for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Ariel, I'm wondering how you feel about this, the hype cycle.
I hate hype cycles, but I have to say that if we're going to crash from here, I'm going to say that I think it's still fine because the tools that we have right now, they're improving my day-to-day exponentially. Like, you know, I use simple models that they're available right now to improve the way I do work. So it's probably not going to live up to the hype and what they're preaching to be soon enough. But what we have right now, I think is pretty stable for what I need them to be.
Yeah. And go ahead, Nathan.
Well, I think, because what we haven't talked about is the last two phases of it. After the trough of disillusionment, you have the slope of enlightenment and the plateau of productivity. Yeah. And so here is where BIM, which for the longest time has been in this hype cycle, has been at the top of the peak of inflated expectations of what is possible, and then continually fallen down into the trough of disillusionment. I think this inflection point that we're talking about is this slope of enlightenment for BIM. And so I think, yeah, we can look at all different technologies that we work with and where are they along that hype cycle, and that, yeah, nobody wants them to go into the trough, but they naturally will have to go through it if we can all accept that it's not actually at its true potential yet. And that it's still in its peak of inflated expectations.
I hate when, you know, people jump, you know, this bandwagon mentality, like everybody just jump into it and they say like, yes, we review your drawings using artificial intelligence. Oh, we look at our models with AI. I mean, I'm using Duolingo, and Duolingo is telling me like, we use AI to review the exercise you had a mistake on. I'm like, you don't need AI for that. Like, it's just a simple algorithm saying, I made a mistake here. Why do you have to say AI? So I don't know. I think that's the problem. When we get to the point, you go to the grocery shopping, you want to get veggies, and they have a sign saying, you know, AI tool reviewing the veggies you buy or whatever. I don't know.
AI freshness calculator. I like that.
There you go. You see?
Yeah, we got a freshness calculator from Nathan Wood. I love it. I love it. But that's what I think, though. I'm with you, Nathan. I think the hype cycle was so hyped and the crash is so real. But the value of what the tool and the large language models and the abilities that OpenAI and ChatGPT brought to us are truly going to bring us out of that and into the productivity and into the usability. So I'm calling for 2024. I think it's going to be the year of information. I think finally with BIM, the intersection of technology adoption, the incorporation and use of large language models on major data sets, whether you're talking about, and you can look back at the podcast recently with my data nerd crew on all of the filings and all of the data that exists, and actually turning that into information and allowing people to act on it, whether it's BuilderBinder and what they're doing or some of these other ones like Upcodes out there. I really think it's the year of information, the year if you've gotten your own things together and you can implement some of these really valuable large language models, generative AI, you know, predictions. You can make really informed decisions much faster, much better, and with much more accuracy. And with that, we're going to change data into information. And for me, that's what I'm looking ahead to in 2024. That's my prediction, at least. Nathan, any prediction for 2024 from you?
I mean, yeah, yes, and I think yes, everything you just said, but I don't think it'll be that easy. There's a long road ahead, and I think everyone's still going to want to boil the ocean, and they're going to want all the data, and they're going to want it to be clean. And I think my only, you know, added recommendation on that, or think looking forward, is starting small, right? Like, you know, find out what is that measurement that you really do care about, that you want to get reliable numbers on, and how do you come up with a system that's going to deliver an incentive model that's going to give you the results that you're looking for? I think too often we look to go get data expecting it either to already be there or to be really easy to get. and we forget, you know, how hard it was to get people to fill out those timesheets in the first place. But the only reason they do is because that's actually how you get paid, right? So it's like, you know, always looking at all these exchanges as two sides of a coin, and how are we really building empathy for the other side of that exchange of data so that we can get to all this potential that we've been talking about.
That's awesome. Ariel, any last thoughts, predictions?
I am going to turn my prediction into just one word, and I want to say that it is baseline. Focus, you know, your 2024 in developing a good baseline. Stop chasing the new shiny object. If you go online and you look for construction tech, you're going to run into robotics, you're going to run into artificial intelligence, all these cool words. But there's probably a lot of people there that don't know how to even use SharePoint and or how to share a file over the cloud. They probably don't even know what a model is when you talk about BIM. So take a step back and define a baseline for you and for your company and slowly, you know, catch up to what's coming new. So that was going to be my word for 2024.
I like it. Baseline, empathy, and information. There we go. We got it. That's your 2024. Man, it is so fun to sit down with you guys. I am excited for a new chapter in 2024. The one thing I can say will be true is the Contech crew will be coming to you every week and bringing you where we were wrong and where we were right, and hopefully some really great stories. And if you're listening in and you want to be on the show or you have an idea for the show, then reach out to me and connect with me on LinkedIn, or you can find us at thecontechcrew.com. Send me an email, reach out. We're looking to tell those stories, the good, the bad, the ugly. We're here for it. Because, you know, we are the good, the bad, and the ugly. So, and you guys can figure out by watching on our new YouTube channel, who's who.
Well said. And Jeff, thank you for leading this crew. I mean, I think so many folks that do listen and you know, talk about the crew, we do have a lot of hardcore listeners here that are counting on us. So thank you for leading the tribe.
I appreciate it. Ariel, thank you so much, buddy. I appreciate having you again.
Thank you for the invitation. And again, happy 2024.
Thank you for tuning in today to Geek Out for our year in review. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontechcrew.com. This is the Contech Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.